You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this. Well, hello, friends. It's Amy. Today on the show, I'm going to introduce you to Stacy Walker. Stacy shares a story about how a health crisis, really a near-death experience, was a catalyst for personal change, personal reinvention, actually. So she shares with us what her life was like and what created or caused the health crisis. And then we talk about her recovery and coming to terms with what it was going to take to get healthier. And then Stacy shares what her life looks like today and why and how she loves her new life. I think that you're going to enjoy this story. So I'm going to stop with the introduction and let's go ahead and get to the interview. Stacy Walker, welcome to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm so happy you're here today. Are you ready for a fun chat?
Amy, I am so ready. Thank you for inviting me on your show.
You are welcome. I start all of my conversations with my guests with the exact same question. Tell us where you are, what part of the world you call home.
I am in Colorado, a little outside of Denver, not too close to the city. We've lived here for about, when we moved here, in 2016, and used to be in Texas most of my life. So,
originally from Texas, now you're in Colorado.
Yes.
One more get to know you question before we get into the topic of the day. What is a recent compliment or something kind that you have said to somebody? It can be something small. It can be from earlier today or earlier this week. You tell us.
Oh my gosh. I've had so many conversations with people. I would say, if I see someone, a stranger, like, if I go to the grocery store, I'll just say, smile, everything's going to be okay.
Very nice. Very nice. Okay. So the topic of the day is that back in 2008, you had a health crisis and this turned into a near-death experience. Are you ready to talk about that today? Yes.
Of course. Right. Yes.
Let's do it. Okay. So because that sounded kind of dramatic, and this is not like an overly dramatic show, I don't want to drag it out and have people wondering what happened. So I want to set before we get to the details, I do want to set the stage for what your life was like before this happened so that we can all understand the shift that underwent. So before 2008, thinking back to that time, because that's quite a while ago, how old were you? Yeah. What kind of job were you doing? What did your family look like? What all the things?
Yeah, so 2008, I was in my late 20s. No, mid-20s, about mid-20s. I was married to my first husband at the time. My oldest son was living with my ex's mom, which was his grandma. It was a pretty wild time. I was pretty much so a wild child, for sure. And, the relationship with my ex-husband, it just was very codependent. It wasn't healthy. I was the breadwinner. I was working at the UT Health Science Center in San Antonio. And I was also working a second job at a bagel shop, 12 hours on Saturday, 12 hours on Sunday, and Monday through Friday, 8 to 5:30 at the university. So there was a lot going on. I just really wasn't taking care of my health. I was drinking a lot. I was doing a lot of unhealthy stuff. So that is the scene. It was a life that was just totally opposite of what it is today. The way that I look at it is, like, sometimes I feel like, for me personally, sometimes I got to go through some hard stuff to get to the other side and realize, like, what it is I want in life and what I don't want. I've always been one of those people that's curious, and which has been a strength, but also it has gotten me in trouble in many ways in my youth. But that's okay because, like I said, I'm on the other side of it. Lots of lessons learned, and it's just helped me be more content with who I am, what I want, what my vision is, and then also the type of people I want in my life. So during that time, I was lost. I would say I was pretty much so lost, no direction. And it was only until I almost died that everything changed.
That is a major wake-up call. I mean, on one hand, I would say in the mid-20s, you're still very young. And my mid-20s, that was also a time of a lot of fun and a lot of experiences, not a lot of great decision-making all of the time, for sure. So I love that you set the stage that way and that you're open with us about that. It's the funny thing about curiosity and experience is there's a lot of pressure to go through life and not make mistakes, but a lot of times you can't learn anything until you try something and mess it up. And so it's this challenge between try stuff but don't make too big a mistakes because they can really, you can pay a price. In 2008, what, tell us what happened with your health.
So I was having this huge pain, like top of my shoulder. And I was functioning, I was going to work, I was doing all the things, and I shouldn't have been because what happened was that my liver wasn't getting rid of the toxins that I was breathing, touching, eating. So my body like became septic.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, and the first the pain it first started with the pain, from my liver. I didn't know what it was at the time because I wasn't thinking my liver and the pain up on my shoulder were connected. It just did not dawn on me because I never knew anyone that would have problems with their liver. So the second sign was I know this is TMI, but it could help somebody who may not know, but my urine was like dark tea color. And that freaked me out, and then I did not realize the severity of the situation until like a week later. Like I went like this for a week, Amy. And finally I went to the hospital one day because I woke up and I literally felt like I was dying. It's a feeling like you just know, like intuitively I knew my body was shutting down. It thing like reality like shifted in a way to where it felt like I was drifting away. That's why I was like, you know what? I'm dying. I need to go to the hospital. I need to go to the emergency room. So when I went to the emergency room, they did all the tests. My doctor like was actually upset with me. He was like, why didn't you come in here sooner? He said, if your enzyme levels were just a few hundred, whatever the measurement, how they measure it was higher, I would have died. So I was probably like 1 or 2 days away from death. So
Yikes.
intuitively, So he gave me a choice. Either I could, oh, you know what? Let me backtrack. Okay, the reason, okay, what I discovered when I was in the hospital is that I have a small liver, so it has to work harder to get rid of toxins. And since I wasn't the healthiest at the time, I was consuming substances that weren't great for me. And that really contributed to, my body, my liver starting to shut down. So my doctor gave me a choice, either stay at the hospital and recover or go home on bed rest. Of course, I'm gonna choose to go home and get on bed rest and get better because who wants to stay at a hospital?
Sure.
My parents, used to work in the medical field. They're retired now, and most people, a lot of people that go to the hospital don't end up coming out of there, especially if there's something severe. So I just did not want to do that. And plus, I thought, oh, I'm going to bounce back in a couple of weeks. You know, naive 25-year-old thinking I was going to bounce back because I'd never experienced any type of health issue like that. So I just really did not realize the severity of the situation. So I went home, not on bed rest. I had to, you know, use up all my sick leave, pay time off, you know, so I would still have my job at the UT Health Science Center. It was like the dream job,
Yeah.
for most people. It really wasn't mine, but I thought that's just what I was supposed to do at the time. And we'll talk about that in a little bit about like if you'd like. But anyway, I went home, got on bed rest, started recovering. And this is a Cliff Notes version. Like it took almost a year, Amy, for me to start feeling like myself again. So
So
in that time period, oh, go ahead.
I have a question. All right. So
Yeah.
we like so you discovered when you were in that you do have a smaller liver, but you were putting your lifestyle was putting strain on your liver is also one of the things that was going on. I'm not a doctor or an expert by any stretch of the imagination, but was this just fast food and 25-year-old binge drinking, or was this like a significant out of context, like just sort of alcohol substance use? Like, what were the things that, if
All of
you
the
want to
above.
share, all of the above? Okay,
All of the above. So
all of
I,
the above.
like I said, I was not living a healthy lifestyle at the time.
And I think that one of the things that is interesting about this is that if you're not living a healthy lifestyle, you think you feel normal, but your not healthy lifestyle has you operating in a standpoint where your concept of normal is not healthy. And so then I think that it's harder. So the doctor said you should have come in sooner, but really you had to probably get very sick before you felt sick because you,
Absolutely.
okay, yeah.
Like
So,
that's exactly what it was. Like I was still going to work.
yeah.
You know, I was still walking around and I should have been in the hospital like a week ago, a week before.
And when your liver shuts down, when you're like, I think that you, it's one of the things like organs, when they all need to be working, guys. Like, we don't have
Yes.
extras that we get to give away. So they all have to
Right.
be working. And so when you say that you, I mean, sepsis kills people. People die from
Yeah.
sepsis, even today, right? It's a really, really
Yes,
big thing.
absolutely.
And so I think that I can't imagine what you felt like. I assume that you were probably very swollen, you were very stiff, you were probably feeling feverish and fluish and just horrible.
It was a nightmare. I'm just surprised I was able to function for a week until I realized like I feel my soul, my spirit drifting away.
And you,
Like
yeah.
it seemed like the day that I went, like when I got up at a, like before I went, like it things felt hazy. It was like a dream state, you know, like it that's what it felt like. And that's when I realized there's something off, you know, because I'd never felt like anything like that in my entire life.
Okay, so you go home. The recovery of this, it takes you a full year to get back to
Yeah.
a point where you feel like you can do things. You actually shared that you changed from you call it a life of addiction, which is how I knew to ask about substances, to a life of freedom and purpose. So I have
Yes.
two questions. First of all, I want to give you a chance to talk about what that means. And the second thing is, I'm curious about whether or not that day in the hospital was like turning a page, instant sobriety, clean living, or whether or not it was a process.
Well, it was instant sobriety because, you know, I followed the doctor's orders, you know, because I didn't want to die, you know, I didn't
Yeah.
want to die. And, you know, and that was my wake up call. You know, that's what I needed in order to get my life in order and to really think about like how I wanted to live life moving forward, you know, and not live that sort of lifestyle anymore. It wasn't hard for me because, I felt like awful and I wanted to live. So I was willing to make whatever changes necessary so I could get better and start living a better life. That whole situation was the catalyst to, the life that I live today. I'm grateful that I didn't die, that I was given a chance to be able to, get my ducks in a row and figure out how I wanted to live this life and move through this life and contribute in this life. And it took that happening in order for me to come to grips with it's time to change.
Had you ever, when you were in your mid-20s and you were doing the things that you were doing, like, and I, hopefully no, like, implication of judgment comes through, because that's not my intention, but I'm curious. Like, did it ever occur to you that you were putting your life at risk with the decisions that you were making?
Yeah, but I would say in my 20s, just like with a lot of young adults, you think you're invincible.
Right. That's the reason. I mean, I think back to things that I did when I was a kid, and in my teenage years and as a young adult. And I sometimes think, I'm like, wow, that was really a whole lot riskier than I realized that it was. And it, 'cause, it's not always as obvious as, it is in the rearview mirror. So that's the reason I wanted to throw that perspective in, because I think that one of the things with the value, you said, you're through this. And the value of having somebody like you tell a story like this is that you are all the way on the other side. And part of that, though, is definitely to acknowledge, in my opinion, this is just my opinion, that we don't always know what the impact of the decisions we're making are. Like, so you, I mean, everybody knows that cigarette cartons come with a warning on them that they can cause something, bad health risks, but people still do it. And I know that when I eat, Doritos or fried foods, no one's ever described those for me as healthy. And yet I don't think that, about the damage I might be doing at that time. And so I just wanted to honor that it's like, at the moment, it doesn't seem like it's necessarily dangerous. But so you were very, very sick. So the doctors gave you kind of an ultimatum when you were in the hospital. They're like, if you continue this, you are not going to make it. Okay.
You're gonna die because you're if you don't take care of your body, your liver, your he was like, your liver's already small, so you've got to make some lifestyle changes. And I was like, okay, even about, gosh, how long ago was this? Like 6 years ago, I started feeling the symptoms again of my liver, and I wasn't drinking. It was environmental, like it's like that. So me removing, being very intentional about what I eat and moving my body and what I drink, it definitely helps. But even when I'm doing that, my liver can still get affected. So looking at that, it's like, well, I can see why. I mean, of course, my doctor's not going to lie to me or anything like that. But I knew it was serious, but I thought I was going to recover quickly. I didn't know it was going to take a year, and that's during that time. Like, I depleted my retirement account, my savings, all of that, to the point to where I needed to figure out a way to earn money from my bed because I couldn't go out and work. And again, I was the breadwinner. So my husband at the time, even with two jobs, like we were at jeopardy of like losing the roof over our head, so that was definitely my wake-up call.
All right. So you're very, very sick. Your doctors tell you you've got to make a change. You're married. Are you able to keep the job and go back? So on, are you on, like, basically bed rest for an entire year? Like, have to stay home? Or okay. All right. So that's.
Stayed home. I did have the job, but I ended up resigning because I started my own. I ended up finding a way to make money from my
on your
bed,
own.
and that's also the catalyst to the life that I live today that I didn't even think was possible.
Very good. So, what are some of the actual day-to-day changes that you made as a result of this very scary health crisis that, and the doctors telling you that you could die? So, what are
Okay.
some of the things that you changed?
Well, the most basic stuff, my golly, you would think, duh, but like exercise, exercise the best that I could. Drink more water, stay away from the processed foods, eat more plants, eat more protein, take vitamins, meditating, praying, just making sure my mental, physical, wait, emotional health. Yeah, here we go. Wait, mental, physical. What am I missing here? Physical, mental,
Physical, mental, spiritual. I
spiritual.
don't
There we
spiritual.
go.
Okay.
Yeah, there we go. That I was prioritizing those because I had a lot of time on my hand. And I was open to any way to help me go through this because going through that time, I mean, my life got flipped, so I could not live the old version of myself anymore, so that was a lot to process. And then coming to grips that I wasn't better in 2, 3 weeks, this went on for a while. So, just taking better care of myself, realizing like what it is that I want, because I was raised in a family to get an education, get a career, stay in that career until you retired, and that never sat right with me. So I just had a lot of time to think about how I wanted to live life moving forward.
It really is a long time, a year. A
Yeah.
year is a long time. And this is a dramatic shift. So you were working two jobs that were both out of the house. So all just really, really hustling and doing all the things. You get very, very sick. The rug is like pulled out from underneath you. You go from going from job to job and busy, busy, busy to home, 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 and healing. So probably
Yeah.
a lot of time was felt, a lot of time was probably spent healing because it takes
Yeah.
a lot of work to do that. But then you don't have the places to go anymore, so you've got time to think about what you want to be and be intentional about those kind of things. Okay, so a lot has changed in your life between then and now. So you realize that, and you've got you've got a lot of motivation to change these things. I asked you to describe your life in your mid-20s, what it looked like, and you shared with us what it was like before this happened. Now I'm going to ask you to share with us what your life looks like today in comparison, so that then we'll have both sides of it. What does life look like for you today?
My gosh, my life, I love it. Beyond my wildest dreams. I have my own business. I have another son, wonderful husband. We live in one of our dream destinations. Still make my health a priority. Still take care of my mental, physical, and spiritual health every single day. I'm at more peace. I'm very intentional about how I spend my time because, I'm closer to the end of it than the beginning of it now. So I'm very, very intentional about that. I've always loved helping people. So my business is a way to provide value to the world, to the people who are receptive to my message. And I think of my business, I think of my business as the ultimate form of creative expression, it's freeing to me. I'm challenged in ways that I like to be challenged. I live a life that a lot of people don't even think is possible because I didn't even think it was possible back in my 20s. So being able to have the freedom to earn as much income, have a spacious calendar as much as I want so I can spend quality time with my family. Having better relationships with my family because I really didn't have that in my 20s because, like I said, I had a wild hair up my butt. So my parents weren't loving that, at the time, but our relationship is so much better. I love myself even more every single day, and that causes a ripple effect to the people that I interact with in everyday life and in my household. Have a great connection with God, source, all of it, you know, and also I just love being able to connect with people from all over the world, you know, like you, having a conversation with like you. Like, I never thought that any of this is possible or that I would even live this type of life, like back in my 20s. Like,
All right, so let's go back. I want to go back and talk about 20-year-old you that was going through this experience, 25-year-old you that was going through this experience. When this was happening, okay, so you were a wild child, you were doing some exploratory things, you were in all the things. When you get sick, what kind of support did you have in this process? Like, and you mentioned that when you were in your wild phase, it was hard on your relationship with your parents. And so when this happened, what, you know, how did that affect, how did the recovery and the illness show up in your relationships?
Well, you know, I really didn't have their support. I actually found support online, you know, which is crazy to think back in 2008, it was like the Wild West, but there were forums, which are like little chat rooms for those of you who don't know, who are like, what are forums? But I started building community with people online, you
Okay.
know, and that was the thing that helped me get through all of that and to help me see what was possible. You know, that's when I met my first business mentor, and she opened my eyes to so many possibilities. And she didn't think that, you know, my big audacious goals were ridiculous or not attainable. You know, she helped me see that, yeah, it's possible. So that's the support I had during that time, and I still have to this day. And of course, I have my own community, and then on top of that, my family. So a heck of a lot more support and abundance of support compared to back then. But the key thing is that I found support in the way that I needed it, so I could get out of my own perspective.
So I think that's
I
really
think that's the most
interesting. I think
important.
it's really interesting because, like, right now in 2025, I don't remember if it was like that in 2008, but we'll, like, there's a lot of pressure that online community and screen time and various ways of connecting online are destructive and not helpful. And I'm sure that lots of parts of that are true. Like, I have very limited patience for some parts of the internet, for sure. But one of the things that I think is really powerful about online, about being online, you were at home and you weren't going out and you didn't have your work community when this was happening, and your relationship with your parents was not helping at that point. That you found an online community, that's an amazing way to find community. And it is something like now in 2025, you can find, if you have a very, very, very specific, you know, thing that you want, a hobby or a quirk or whatever, you can find people all over the world and create community that is limitless, limitless. It's really an amazing thing. And I think that sometimes those of us who are out there on the interwebs get a bad rap. So I will speak up on behalf of that every once in a while. Okay, so this is not a great question. And to every interview I do, I have at least one question that when I write it, I'm like, I don't know if this is a good question, but we'll go ahead anyway. This is hard because, you know, you have lived your experience and this is your story. And no matter what you think about it, you can't actually go back and change the things that you already did. But do you think when you think about your life and who you are, because really you are the same person that you were when you were 15, when you were 22, and are, as you are today, do you think that there is a chance that you would have found your way to make the, to, you know, step away from substances, clean up your life, focus on your health and your spirituality and your community without the near-death experience and the year of healing?
That's a great question.
I'm not
And
sure it is a good question, but answer it anyway.
I think it is because it gives you something to think about. Like, so I know there's infinite number of ways that we can get to the same destination, but I think without those experiences, I don't think I probably wouldn't have gotten, Those experiences taught me something. Those experiences helped me be a stronger person, to see the contrast of what I want in life and what I don't want in life. Life is a journey. It's full of experiences. Oh, most of it's a learning experience. I'd say all of it's a learning experience. So I don't think I would be here today if I did not go through that. I probably would be 6 feet under.
Oh, that's scary. That's scary to think about, I bet. Yeah, that's scary. Sometimes, everybody's life has hardship. I don't think there's anybody who makes it, from cradle to grave without having challenges in their life. And everybody's challenges are different. But some people like really sort of, sometimes there are people I talk to and they're like, well, I had a hard life, and so you also need a hard life. And it's almost like they manufacture challenges. And I'm like, I don't know if you need those extreme challenges all the time. But that there is, people talk about the blessings of the hard experiences that they have in their life. And I think that that's what you're saying, that even though it was really hard and really, really tough, it brought you through to be able to do this next part of your journey. And so that is that. Okay, so we've talked a lot about the transition and you have your own business. I want to give you a chance now before we do the final three questions to tell the audience, what you do, who you serve, how you help people, and how they can find you online after they listen to the interview.
So I'm the founder of Unleash Your Ambition, and I'm a di digital marketing expert, consultant, coach, mentor, and a business mentor. And I help people specifically who have coaching, consulting, or course businesses build a six-figure foundation, six-figure plus foundation that's aligned with their mission, vision, and personality. And how we do that, I have a marketing and sales process that you can use, that you can play in according to your vision, mission, and personality. So it's not cookie cutter. It's very unique to your vision and how you see yourself serving people through your business. So it's very unique. It's the foundational stuff that every successful business has, and just being able to create a streamlined marketing and sales process that fits you is like the biggest difference in trying to do what a million other people are doing or a million other ways. It's like I think the best way to be successful in the online space is figure out what works best for you. Applying the foundational pillars, which there's five of them. And I've been helping marketing and selling their products and services, since 2008. So, never thought in a million years I would love marketing. I didn't even think business was even an option for me. So I'm just a testimony of to what's possible, and what was the next thing?
So tell us your website, and then I'll share the offer that you have for the audience.
Absolutely. My website is unleashyourambition.com.
All right, perfect. All right, so you have a great offer for the audience, which is a complimentary business breakthrough session. So the value of this session, you guys, is priced at $1,000. There's a link in the show notes that reduces this to zero. It's a session where you will pinpoint exactly where your marketing and sales process is leaking money. And there's more details about that. You'll find that in the show notes wherever you're listening or watching to the show. But the other place this link is that it's in the email. If you join the Imperfect Adulting email community, then I email you all of the stuff about this episode, including the link. That is by far the easiest way to get the links, because then you just click on it. You don't have to hustle for a piece of paper while you're and a pen while you're on your morning commute. It comes right to your inbox. That's a very generous offer, Stacey. I want to say thank you very much for offering that to the audience. Now I'm gonna, are you ready for the final three questions? These are just for fun. Okay. What is your opinion on reality TV shows? Love it, hate it, or depends on the mood?
I don't love it.
I don't love it. I don't want to say I hate it, but I don't love it. Okay.
I don't love it. I mean, I guess in the early years of it, it was fascinating, but
Okay.
that's all it is. I mean, heck, social media is like a reality show for millions of people now. So
That's
don't love it.
true. That's true. That's a very good point. Death of the reality TV show that everybody is living their lives online. All right, there we go. All right. One of the things about being an adult is that there are many, many never-ending daily tasks and chores, laundry, cleaning, cooking, shopping. What is one repetitive daily task that you would happily give up forever and ever without even thinking twice?
Well, it's weird because I like cleaning. I have a lab dog, and he sheds ferociously, around this time. That I would give away. And yeah, I could go to the groomer, but I do it myself.
So
But
keeping
that
up on
I
top of
would,
the shedding.
yes, it's insane,
Yeah,
especially when all
no,
my
it is.
furniture's darkened.
It is keeping up on the dog fur, dog hair, the undercoat. That is a definite project. I have a rule that every once in a while comes up. I was like, I do not want any pets that have a more complicated hair routine than I do. If they're going to be more high maintenance than I am, they can't come in the house. That's my rule. All right. So when it comes to an indulgent snack or a treat, like something that's a reward, do you prefer snacks that are sweet, like candy or cookies, something salty, like chips, or something else altogether?
I love dark chocolate.
Dark chocolate. Many, many years ago, I was on a road trip with a friend of mine, and we stopped and we got chocolate. And he was like, "Dark chocolate is healthy and it's delicious." And he got like dark chocolate that was like 90% cacao in it, right? And so he passes it out to all of us that are in the car on this road trip. And we're all like, I mean, it's not delicious. It is bitter at that point. It's like baker's chocolate.
No.
We're all like, oh, this is not, this might be delicious. I mean, this might be healthy, but this is not Hershey's milk chocolate. So very, but dark chocolate is fantastic. That's it, Stacey Walker. Thank you so much for being a wonderful guest today on the show.
Thank you for having me. It's been an honor.
Thank you for listening today. I hope that you enjoy the show. And before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Obviously, subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Obvi again, please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself, head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adult to your adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone, signing off. The Imperfect Adulting Podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level.